All right, good evening. Welcome to Simple Actions. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hello, Debbie.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer and a moment of silence.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 10. And our panel tonight is Emma and Frank. I'd like to welcome them to the meeting. And before we get started, let me read this step, which is step 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And what we do is we read a paragraph, and then the panel will discuss their experience with it. So, step 10 is a shorter one. It starts on page 84, and the first paragraph is, "This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code." And we'll start with Emma.
Hello, everyone. My name is Emma. I'm an alcoholic.
Emma.
First, I'd like to say thank you to Dave for asking me to speak. It's a privilege to be here. And for me, I have experience with doing this step and not doing this step. But first, I'd like to talk about, you know, how I do this on a daily basis. You know, for me in Alcoholics Anonymous, my experience has been, or my opinion is that this is, you know, one of the most underrated steps. I feel like when I came in, I was, you know, and I started working with a sponsor, I was so focused on, you know, the fourth step and the ninth step. And the way it was explained to me is that, you know, I went to rehab, I went to treatment, I went to, you know, all these places, and there was two problems with, you know, things like that. You know, I couldn't stay sober after, you know, going to these places, and number one, you know, a lot of them weren't based on spirituality. They didn't have, you know, a spiritual aspect of a program. And number two, you know, I would graduate or I would get a certificate. You know, it wasn't something that was consistent in my life. After I left, you know, the rehab place, I was like, all right, you know, I faked it till I made it. Now, you know, I'll just, you know, try to, you know, use their coping skills or whatever it was they told me to do. And, you know, eventually it wouldn't work and I, you know, would drink again. But anyways, so, you know, when I came into the rooms and I started working the steps and I get to this one, you know, it's kind of hard to finagle my way out of something, you know, that's so, that my life depends on. And the number one thing for me when I read this paragraph is, you know, looking at, we continue this for a lifetime. And steps 4 through 9, you know, the basic concepts I learn about on, you know, the previous pages. And looking at where it says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. You know, that sounds like step 4. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. That sounds like step 6 and 7 to me. We discuss them with someone immediately. Step 5, make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. 8 and 9, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. That sounds like step 12. So, you know, when I came in here and I heard people share and be like, yeah, I gotta do the steps twice a year, you know, gotta do the whole house clean thing, all, and I'm like, like I gotta do this, you know, all this whole, you know, thing that took me 8 hours to do one day sitting with a sponsor. And I heard people say that, and then, you know, and how it works, it says here are the steps we took, you know, not taking, retaking, here are the steps we took. And the purpose of the 10th step is that I continue to do, you know, the bulk of the program, steps 4 through 9, you know, the thing, step 4, you know, I'm getting rid of all of these things that I, that are blocking me off from getting that relationship with a higher power. And, you know, I could go on, but I'm doing this on a daily basis. And what that looks like for me is, it's usually, because I didn't really understand, I thought I was supposed to do this at night, really. Like I said before, I had experience with not doing this stuff. I didn't really start doing it consistently until I had about 2 years sober. But, you know, it looks like I have a text message template typed out with these questions. And throughout the day, you know, say if someone, like the other day, someone shared in a meeting and said something and it really, like, made me angry. And I went to the bathroom and typed up really quick, you know, resentful, you know, at this woman because she said this. And, you know, I get to look at that on paper, you know, on paper. This is the 21st century. But, you know, and then I send that to somebody else, and there's, like, three of us. There's three women. One of them I've never even met before. She lives in Ohio. And then someone else in my sponsorship family. But we go back and forth, and we're accountable with each other. But so that's how I was taught how to do it. So that's it right now.
Thanks. Frank Heath, alcoholic. Can you guys hear me? No? Frank Heath, alcoholic. Test, check.
Hey, Frank.
My sobriety date's 1997, November 6th. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people, and this is my home group here in the Norfolk, Virginia area. I'm going to try not to make stuff up and tell lies, but I'll try not to hide behind being funny all night long. You'll notice progressively, as I get funnier, I'm more and more lost about whatever it is that we're talking about tonight, because that's how I deal with things. Step 10, I'm a C+ student. Let's get that out of the way right now. And step 10 is something that I have continually struggled with for 17 years in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll be the first to admit that. I love to drink, loved to drink. would probably still love it if I could get away with it. Let's get serious about that. I didn't the way that I practiced this quote-unquote principle as a practicing alcoholic was basically with a baseball bat. And that's the way that I went through life. You know, my sole purpose, whether I wanted to admit it or not, was to get my way when I wanted to get it. And I pretty much tried to stay 18 for as long as I possibly could. I just drank a lot and do a lot of drugs. That was my plan. I didn't realize that was my plan, but clearly that was my plan up until I was about... I don't think I had an adult thought until I was about 32, and one of which was to get back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I turned 21 in a detox and came into the rooms, and I was a train wreck at 21. Went to a lot of meetings, drank a lot of coffee. There were tons of smoking meetings back then, and it hung over the room about this high. And, you know, you could take a pack of cigarettes and one match into a meeting, and life was good. And I made a lot of friends. And I was the kind of alcoholic that just by the nature of stopping what I was doing, my life got better. Because I did a lot of bad things. And I was sharing with somebody before the meeting. I did what I've heard a lot of people do or not do since I've been in the rooms. I made a lot of friends. I went to a lot of meetings. I made the fellowship my life, and I didn't work the steps. I had a sponsor, and I'm not blaming this. This is all Frank's way of doing things. That was more of a friend than a sponsor. And after 3 years, it seemed like a reasonable idea. I knew I was going to drink. I wasn't kidding myself about that. And I thought, you know what? You might make it 6 months. The wheels will start to come off, and I'll just go back. I'll jump off the train right as it's about to go over the cliff, and I'll just go back to AA. That jump took about 8 years to happen. And I remember laying in the bed, and I know a lot of you have heard this, but it's part of my story. At 21, you know, thinking to myself that my life couldn't possibly get any worse than it was right at that moment. And then I remember thinking about thinking that, you know, when I was 30, 28, 29, wishing that my life was just that horrible. Like, I would pay money if I could just get it back to that kind of horrible. And I stayed out as long as I could convince myself that it was going to be different. And I got to a place where I couldn't convince myself of that anymore. And I was completely miserable day in and day out. And I was still alive, and all that stuff intersected. And I ended up back in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, November 6, 1997. Got a sponsor, started working a set. I knew what I needed to do. And I didn't have a lot of the struggle that I had the first go around. I was way more malleable and teachable and pliable and could actually ask someone for help when I got back to the rooms. So I got a sponsor. I was lucky enough. The guy that was sponsoring me, when we got to the fourth step, all of the sponsees began to work a fourth step. And all those guys are still in my life today. And that's my circle, and that's who I talk to. And I talk to somebody in that circle every day for the past 17 years. And I'll be honest with you, that's... if I had to pick one thing that's kept me in the rooms and kept me... It's that fellowship. It's those guys that are doing the same thing that I'm doing, that I can be as objective as the, you know, with my doctorate in AA and my awards and letters, and I can start working through a life situation and think that I have been as objective as is humanly possible. I've got the right ways figured out. And about the third, that's the stupidest effing thing I've ever heard in my life out of one of those guys, usually gets my attention. And it's still that way today because I still need guidance. I am selfish and self-centered. And fast forward, I get to this 10th step and I get an opportunity after the work that we've chopped through during the first 9 steps to turn that vacuum on every day and try and keep my side of the street clean. And it was hysterical. Like I was, you know, I got to the 10th step when I was still, I don't think I was quite a year sober. And I ran a construction job that usually had 30 or 40 subs on it that I kind of quasi-managed while I was doing what I did. And I spent an unbelievable amount of time every day blowing up at somebody because it was my nature, and my nature hadn't changed yet, and then going back and working that 10-step to the point to where people would laugh at me when they saw me coming because I did it all day long. I had to, because I didn't know how to be a grown-up, and I didn't know how to treat people with respect, and I didn't know how to treat, you know, people the way they wanted to be treated, the way that I want to be treated. And I got a lot of experience very early on with a lot of people working the 10th step. And I read the part, you know, the words that jump out at me about that are resolutely and immediately things that I'm really, really bad at. And then I'm great at leaving off that hole, and then we immediately turned our attention to others. Like, that doesn't even... I would say 50% of the time in my life, that doesn't even dawn on me. I literally, 3 weeks ago, programmed a bunch of alarms to go off on my phone every 2 hours. Every 2 hours as reminders to make a conscious contact with my higher power and to try and work the 10th step. Because that's who I am. I mean, that's who I am. That's all I got. I'll pass. Thanks.
All right, we're going to continue on page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
So, you know, for me, what that means is that, you know, I don't have, because I've worked the steps, you know, I don't have this willpower to, you know, resist a drink. What I really have is, you know, that option to accept spiritual help. And now, you know, I have access to that and I have, you know, clear-cut directions on what to do. And for me in my life, what that looks like today is that I remember... I used to, you know, come home and my mom would, you know, have a glass of wine every night and I would just not even look at her. I would just come home, like, with my head down and, like, run up the stairs into my room, like, lock it and, you know, try to distract myself, you know, and I just was avoiding people who drank. And, you know, if people would bring it up... you know, I would try to change the conversation. If there was, you know, that commercial on the television, click, you know, next channel, whatever. You know, it was like I was trying to hide from it. And I did, you know, for a little while, I was, you know, hiding in meetings. And I was like, you know, I'd come here and feel a little bit better. But, you know, after the meeting, I would take you hostage in the parking lot, you know, and after everybody's going home. And I'm just like... you know, someone gives me a ride home and they're like, all right, you know, time to go. And I'm just like, I go home and I'm like miserable. And this is where, you know, the magic really happens for me in Alcoholics Anonymous is that, you know, I'm freed from that obsession. And there's no other thing that I, you know, I try to find, you know, some other way to get rid of that, because that mental torture was just so, you know, it was hell. And, you know, I love at the end when it says, that is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. The obsession is at bay for me, you know, when I'm doing this. And, you know, God isn't going to do for me what I can do for myself, which is taking action. What happens when I don't do this is going to be explained in the next paragraph. But anyway, the 10-step promises for me have been that, or, you know, what that looks like in my life now is that I'm in college, you know, and I remember I worked at this pizza place for like a year and a half before, or in high school, and they're like, they knew I was sober, but they didn't know I came to AA, and they would all be like, it's impossible for you to stay sober in college, you know. And I knew, you know, I was like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I have, you know, I work a 12-step program, but, you know, they were like trying to make bets with me. They're like, I'll bet you my life savings, you know, and it was like a joke to them. And I had the privilege of living with an alcoholic who, you know, not only was a daily drinker, but it was like her motive, like, for me to drink, to get me to drink with her. And during that time, you know, it was very uncomfortable, but, you know, I never had that desire. I never had that compulsion. You know, sometimes the thought would come and I would be like, you know, I wonder if I really am missing out, you know? But I reacted sanely and normally. It was like, you know, over my head, it passed. And I didn't, you know, spiral down into that thought and didn't know, you know, was helpless or hopeless. You know, and I don't have to run up to my room today. You know, I can sit and have dinner with my mom and with friends, you know, and they can drink casually, and that's fine. And that's mind-blowing to me. I can't, you know, put into words. I can't describe that. All I know is that it's not me who's doing that. But I do know that that doesn't make me, you know, not an alcoholic anymore. You know, like it was described, I never regrow new legs. You know, if I, you know, I'm relieved of that obsession, but it's still important for me to realize that if I went back out, you know, which is guaranteed I don't have to do if I, you know, do this, but it's going to be the same go around, you know, like Frank said, it's not going to be anything different. So, yeah, thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, I was fortunate and have been in Alcoholics Anonymous with the whole craving and the whole my response to being around alcohol. I think I was in enough pain and my life was banged up enough when I got here that I had this really, really healthy fear for the first time in my life. When I first got sober, I wouldn't go in a 7-Eleven, and I love 7-Elevens. Like, like, look at me when I tell you, like, that's the greatest store ever. I don't care what anybody says. But I wouldn't, I mean, I didn't want to drive by them. I mean, I literally was afraid of getting struck drunk somehow against my will. And I had the dreams, and I had the... And they were vivid enough that I woke up on occasions and was awake for 30 or 40 minutes before I realized I hadn't really done anything. It was just such a huge ingrained, you know, part of my life before I stopped. And, you know, I mean, the reality of it was, I mean, I had some quote-unquote friends that were basically acquaintances, and they were just like I was. If you weren't holding or weren't in possession of a way, you know, to get drunk or high, then maybe we weren't such great friends that day. But I mean, that's how my life worked, and I had this very wide circle of acquaintances that I used drugs and alcohol with, but literally no one that I called and said, you know, let's talk about life. I mean, there just wasn't anybody. I didn't know how to do that in the first place. So that part was easy for me. Like, it was easy for me. you know, the glamour of my, you know, drugs and alcohol abuse had been gone for, you know, 7 years. So I didn't feel like I was missing out on some piece of my life by not drinking, and quite frankly was afraid of going around it. The only place, weirdly enough, that I felt okay being around booze was at my parents' house, because my father was always, you know, he's a normal guy, you know, he has one or two and he's done, he's sleepy, you know, weirdly enough. And you know, so I always felt safe being in that house, knowing full well that there was, you know, a Jim Beam bottle that had some of the cheapest, you know, whatever rot gut he could pour into it, you know, and call bourbon, that he drank with water. Never understood that. So that wasn't an issue for me. And then fast forward, you know, I'm working the steps, I'm doing the things, you know, a lot of the things you guys asked me to do. You know, I've got sober alcoholic men in my life, and you know, I've blinked twice and I'm 5 years sober, and I discover that I can go shoot pool if I want to. You know, that I can go do things that if I want to. What I struggled with early on, with regards to just that topic, was getting asked about, you know, being at a Christmas party. Hey, can I get you a drink? No, I'm good, man. Because I went straight for the, let's disguise it, let's get a short glass, put something in it that looks like booze, and let's avoid it altogether. I got comfortable with being an alcoholic, and I had a lot of these little witty replies about, and plus I got to the point where I actually had this perverse form of enjoyment when somebody would ask me if I wanted a drink. It's like, nah, I don't want one. And I love to watch them twist around and start to explain to me how they really don't drink as much as they used to. And you know, I start hearing these stories about people that I don't even know about how, yeah, I've cut way back, you know, in the last 6 months. Good for you, bro. That's awesome. But, you know, and I had to, you know, people ask me, you know, why'd you stop? And I, you know, well, you know, I drank up my life's quota at 32. You know, I mean, I'll get you arrested if we start drinking. You know, just whatever, you know. And what I discovered, I think, was the more comfortable I got with being an alcoholic, the easier that part, you know, got to me. But I remember, like, being a year or two sober and people asked me about that, and I felt like it was a trigonometry question. If I didn't get it right, I was going to fail life. And it just put me under a lot of pressure. But that part has been, you know, has been not a non-issue for me. I mean, I go where I want to go. I do things that I want to do. It's the other part of that step that I cannot say is a non-issue. Let's see. There's a section where it talks about... Hang on 1 second. What step are we on? 10. The miracle of it, we are not fighting, neither we are avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And that's the piece that I always, the one thing that I've done, and I was told to do it very, very early on, and I questioned everything when I got here, I'm not going to lie to you. I always did it, but I like to torment everybody and question stuff anyway. I pray in the morning, I meditate, and I pray at night. And thank my higher power, that's the one constant in my life that I've been able to stay with. And honestly, I think between that and having the guys that I talk to in my life, that's what gets me through the times where, you know, a better AA would have a better go of it in life. But, you know, that's the piece that was ingrained in me very, very early on, that I believed in. I don't know why I believed somebody. And actually, the answer that I got when I asked about why I needed to hit my knees and pray, because I was completely ready for a lot of retort when I was told that, was that's what my sponsor asked me to do because that's what worked for him. I'm like, that's pretty solid. You know, that's what that guy knows, so that's what he's asking. And I don't have a lot of argument for that. That's all I got.
All right. We're going to go on to page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
So thank God I wasn't ran over or shot, because I swear, you know, someone could have mistaken me for a goose. I was squawking and pooping all over the place. At this point, when it says, you know, we are headed for trouble, what my life looks like when I'm not doing Alcoholics Anonymous is much the very same of when I was drinking. I'm just not drinking. And it got to that point for me. When I had about a year and a half sober, I was like, you know, I'm young. No one's gonna, you know, ask me to sponsor them. You know, I'll do that when I get older. And, you know, I can just kind of do what I want. And that's exactly what I did. And, you know, it was kind of like cafeteria sobriety. You know, I took what looked good and I left the rest. And I started going to like one meeting a week, which was my home group. And I would, you know, call my sponsor when I felt like it. I got into this spot where, you know, I did the same with prayer and, you know, these maintenance steps. I just, you know, did it when I felt like it. Didn't really crack the book open much. And so, you know, I headed for a lot of trouble. And I, what happened was that, you know, I became very restless, irritable, and discontent again. But I was acting based off of, you know, how I felt again. You know, like I did my whole entire life up until the point where I got here. And I started, you know, acting out and doing worse things that I did, or doing, you know, worse things than I had done when I was shrinking. I stole 2 cars. I almost wrecked a marriage. I started, you know, doing all these things, but I was sober, you know, and I was like, that conscience, you know, it sucks having that, because, you know, I knew right from wrong at that point. And the difference was, is that, you know, my whole life I didn't know right from wrong. You know, I was raised that way. But I became everything that I was again. And I was just, you know, I had to get that ease and comfort, you know? So I would use, you know, the adrenaline pumping stuff, you know, like the stealing and, you know, the lying and whatever. And at about, you know, 2 years sober, I, you know, that mental twist, you know, started to, you know, start cranking, you know, in my brain. And I was like, you know, I'm kind of running out of things, you know, to use that, you know, using other people, using, you know, that adrenaline pumping stuff. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't doing the job. And, you know, that thought of, you know, taking a drink, you know, started to return for me. And it wasn't necessarily the obsession, but I did think about it, you know, at least once a day. And I became very afraid. And that's, you know, when I started to avoid it again. I was like, I can't, you know, I was afraid that I was going to walk into a restaurant and, you know, there would be a drink on the bar and I would just take it. And I was like, I don't know, you know, what to do. And I reached this jumping off point in my sobriety. I was like, I can't go on in AA because, I mean, at the time I was like, I'm doing it when I wasn't, but, you know, I was like, it's not working. But I couldn't imagine going back, you know, to the way things were, drinking. So I reached this jumping off point, sober. And I remember I was like, you know, the only option that I have is to kill myself, you know, and I reached that point again that that hopelessness. And I decided that, you know, the night I was going to do it, I planned it out. And my sponsor now actually called me, and he was like, hey, you want to go to a meeting? And in my mind, I was like, no. But I was like, all right, you know, this is the last time I'm going to see a few of my friends, and I'll just, you know, hug them and say goodbye. And they won't really know, but, you know, I know it will be the last time that I see them. So I go to this meeting, and, you know, I sit there, and I'm, like, rolling my eyes. And, you know, I hear this person share, and, I just can't explain it. It's not, you know, like I said, it's not me. This person started talking about, you know, how they had, you know, 2 years, and they weren't doing AA, and they were so miserable, and I was, like, what? You know, I was like, someone else felt that way, you know, because I thought I was so alone. I was like, I'm an AA, and, you know, I wasn't, I think people saw it in me, but I didn't see it in myself, you know, that I was miserable. I just pretended I wasn't. And when I would go home, I would act the opposite. So, you know, this person was sharing, and I was like, you know, after the meeting, I lost it. I was like, I need help. You know, I don't know what to do. And that's when, you know, I got with them and I worked the steps again. But this time, you know, what happened is that, you know, I had to focus really on 10, 11, and 12, you know, the maintenance steps. And it says, every day is a day where we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. And that used to scare me, because I was like, I would hear in meetings, like, it's God, maybe it's God's will that my son got cancer, or, you know, this and that. And I'm like, oh, you know, I was kind of scared. God's will, like, ooh, what is that? You know, and what that means for me is that, you know, in the third step, I turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand him. And my conception of God is, you know, a kind, loving, understanding, and forgiving, you know, God. That's the idea. And it's, you know, the same today. And it's really simple. So, you know, in order to be a friend, you know, I have to act like one. In order to serve God, I must act God-like. So I need to, you know, practice those spiritual principles. I need to be kind, loving, understanding, and forgiving. And that's, you know, what God's will is. My will is beautifully described on page 62. You know, I'm resentful. I'm selfish. I'm, you know, inconsiderate. And I'm rude. And, you know, those things don't go away. You know, some of them do. But some of those things, you know, when I'm in a situation, you know, I immediately, you know, can react based off of how I feel. Or I can respond. I can take an inventory, do a 10-step, look at the facts, and then respond. And that's, you know, for me, what God's will is me, you know, acting the opposite based off of how I feel. So, you know, when I'm resentful, I'm feeling those things, you know, I do the opposite. So, yeah. That's all. Yeah, that's it.
Thanks. So what I know about myself, and the older that I get, what I've discovered is the less I definitively really know about anything. And I'm really comfortable with that. That's a good place to be for me. I would have slapped me bald if I'd have seen me in a meeting at 5 years sober. I don't know if I could have. Because I knew the one right way that you were all missing out on. But what I do know is I'm slow. I'm not the sharpest pencil in the box. And that I learn from extremes, extreme situations, extreme consequences. The longer that I've done this, the good news to some of this story, I remember being new in sobriety, and I would start to, I don't know if not be happy is the right word, but I would be in the beginnings of starting to experience some self-created pain in my life, and I would have no idea where it was coming from, what it was, what I was doing, what I wasn't doing. And sometimes it would be months, you know, before I would get a handle on it. The good news for me today is typically when I start to get uncomfortable, I have a pretty good idea of what or why that is pretty early on in it. Like I don't spend like 3 or 4 weeks floating around trying to figure out why I'm miserable. I generally know. All of the good things that I've done in my life and the good decisions that I've made have been through a process of elimination of checking off the wrong things to do. I mean, that's how I've arrived at any of the decent direction mm-hmm. and decent things in my life is because I've backed over it in a bus. Mm-hmm. After running over the 27 things that are completely wrong, that I don't need to be doing, that cause me harm, that cause me pain. That's how I learn. I have to be miserable. I have to experience some level of misery in order to learn anything. Always been that way. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. That's me. I mean, I remember I called my current sponsor, I don't know if it's been a year, maybe a little bit longer, after probably, I could technically say that I had a sponsor, but I probably hadn't used a sponsor really in 2 years. And I'll do that at the times where I most need a sponsor, because that's who I am. When things get hard in my life or they get difficult, I'm a dude. I like to circle the wagons. I don't want to tell anybody about it. I want to figure it out. I want to offer up 4 suggestions to God and have him direct me towards the one that I've already think is probably the right one. I just need his okay. I mean, that's how I do things. It's funny, but it's pathetic at the same time. And I got to that place, you know, a couple of years ago through, you know, this program is easy when the wind is blowing in the direction that I want to go in and the seas are smooth. You know, my character gets tested when things start going wrong. I mean, that's when I find out who Frank is and where Frank is, you know, in his program. And I denied that for 2 years. You know, I had the right ideas. I was handling things the right way, and I just participated in the biggest cluster, you know, that I've been part of in a long, long time in sobriety. And I woke up and finally realized that, you know, maybe this isn't going so well. Maybe you could start working the 10th step again. Maybe you could get a sponsor that you actually talk to on a regular basis. Maybe you could sponsor other people. I mean, but I do that periodically. Like, I will call an AA. I mean, it just is what it is. I'll call a timeout about every 2 or 3 years. I can't sit here and tell you that I don't do that. And it might last a month. It might last 2 years. I'm the guy they talk about in the big book that I forget the way it's exactly worded because I am a C+ student. That basically just says no to say no for the sport of it. You know, that doesn't want to do something basically just because you've been asked. And I get some sort of perverse enjoyment out of that and I always suffer for it. The good news is I know that about myself. and I have enough people in my life that help me through that. But the thing, what I struggle with the 10th step is the actual writing down the inventory and the actual calling the sponsor part. The other part I struggle with, I'll apply 75 to 80% of it in my life just like I did today. And it didn't even dawn on me to turn my attention to someone else. I did it by happenstance because there was somebody in my life that needed it. But it's still not an instinct for me. You know, it's still not, like, that's why I have the 800 reminders in my phone to, like, check in with God periodically throughout the day. Because left to my own design, I'm gonna pull the crank. I'm going to pray in the morning. We're going to get right. We're going to get a plan together. And then I'm going to pick that bat up, and I'm going to jump out into the world. And then I'm going to say I'm sorry at night. You know? And then I am going to reach out to some people and make the amends, but it's still clunky for me, you know. And that all sounds horrible, but but I'll also say I have a fantastic life today. Like, I know there is a God because my life is the way that it is. It wasn't anything close to this when I came in to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was whatever your definition of a train wreck is, multiply it by 10. And that's what my life was like on a daily basis. And I got this unbelievable gift when I walked into the rooms and I got connected with these unbelievable people that I didn't want to talk to. And I could sit here for hours until you all, like, stabbed pencils in your own eyes, you know, telling you about all the great things that happened in my life. And that's because of this program, and that's because of sponsorship and sober people in my life today. I mean, that's how it happened. And getting an opportunity to screw this stuff up on a regular basis and talk to guys and talk to women about how to do it right, you know, and getting hurt enough and not having to go out and steal your car or take your stuff to fix it. I mean, I have choices today that I never, ever, ever had as a practicing alcoholic and drug addict. That's all I got.
All right. And we have a few more minutes, and there's only one more paragraph, so I'm going to read that, and if y'all would like to discuss it, that'd be great. It's on 85. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action.
So, if we have carefully followed directions, you know, my experience that I had of not doing AA, you know, I was a brutal teacher, but it had to be, because I learned, you know, that although, you know, I was here, you know, my, you know, it's not, you know, I don't have a drinking problem, you know, I have a sober problem, and when I'm without any, you know, sort of spiritual solution, you know, and this one has worked for me, that I'm the same person, you know. And when it says we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us, you know, this vital sixth sense, what that looks like for me is that in my life, you know, kind of like what Frank was talking about, you know, I still have feelings, I still have thoughts, you know, that I can't control. And I, you know, get resentful, and these things still happen, you know, and sometimes I rest, you know, on those laurels, but eventually, you know, that uncomfortability, that pain will, you know, drive me to accepting, you know, the spiritual help and doing it. So, you know, what that looks like is when I'm going through something in my life, you know, change, breakup, you know, loss, you know, whatever. When I'm feeling that today, a thought will, like, pop in my head, you know, when I'm, like, a song will come on the radio, and I'll, like, start singing, and, like, all those memories come up, and I get really into it, and then I, like, start feeling, like, you know, whatever, like, crap, and I'm just romanticizing, or whatever, you know, a thought will pop in my head, and it's like, why don't you stop, like, self-pitying and call, you know, that newcomer's number that you have, you know, and that's, for me, it's, you know, becoming quicker and quicker, but, you know, it's just stuff like that. That's not me, you know. I don't have the capacity to think of other people because I never cared about anyone else, even when I tried to, when I genuinely tried to. You know, it never, you know, worked. It wasn't ever consistent. So that, you know, God consciousness for me is that, you know, I, you know, in my life now, I get to go, I'm studying abroad, I get to go to Malta and backpack Europe, and I'm like, this and this and this, and it's like, my job is to be of maximum service to God and His kids and carry the message. you know, that's all I need to really worry about, you know, despite all the other stuff that I could be focusing on, you know. So, and that change that was produced, you know, like it talks about, you know, that obsession when I was relieved, you know, the things that I'm able to do today, like, you know, this upcoming great, awesome opportunity that I have, that's still not me, you know, that's God working in my life. So, yeah, that's it.
Thanks. I still today, I'm part of this text chain in the morning, because we're pathetic and can't and can't read what we're supposed to read on a regular basis. So four of us all ping in with each other in the morning about what we've read. And basically we read, you know, the 11th step every morning, part of the time. And I have a buddy that will text, "I will be done," and somebody else will chime in with some other God comment. And what I noticed the other day is that mine are always intentionally devoid of the mention of a higher power. I'll pick like two really we pause, you know, that's our step like that. It's never thy will, it's never about, and it's still this weird hang up that I have about publicly announcing my reliance on a higher power. 17 years I can't, it makes me uncomfortable to do that. My point with all that is it's definitely, I know for a fact that if life was fair, I wouldn't be here. I have no qualms with that. I understand the gift that I've been given. I understand completely without reservation that I don't have the power. But I like to try it, you know. I like to try it on a regular basis. I like to have the power, and I want to knock the stuff around and make it go my way. And without, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, and without this step specifically, and without some people to talk to about it, I would, without this part of the program, I would drink again eventually, because I would just do what Frank thinks is right, and Frank gets that wrong most of the time still, and I'm cool with that. Like, I'm totally that doesn't keep me awake at night. Like, I am cool with the fact that I need help, that I need guidance, that I need other men in my life that have been down the path with me to talk about the things that I'm doing or not doing or about to do, or and that I get to do these steps over and over and over again. Like, I'm a fan of that. Like, I mean, I am down with participating in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the 12 steps, and doing it on a regular basis.
All right, then I'd like to thank Emma and Frank for sharing. All right, we're going to pass the basket around. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. All right, we have announcements. This group will have the great supper and speaker on Monday. We meet on Monday, February the 9th. It's going to be a potluck at 6 o'clock. Bring a dish if you wish. 7 p.m. is the speaker from Richmond's coming down, Sammy G. And we have flyers. We move the table. Okay, it's over here now. We have flyers on the table. And are there any other announcements? Wow. Okay. Moving on. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Okay. Now, the important question. Newcomers, is there anyone in your first 30 days of sobriety who would like to welcome you? Not to embarrass you, but could you just give us your first name so we can welcome you? We're all over. Yes, there's a brave one there. What's your name? Table. The papers are free. The books are for sale. You can see any of the home group members if you're interested in buying any of a big book. Sponsorship. Sponsorship is in AA. It's yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we also have at the end of the meeting, Catherine and Evan will be up here. At the table, if you have any questions about sponsorship, I would be glad to help you with that. Smokers, please use the butt can and keep your butts away from the front door of the church. Where am I? Keep away from the door because there are other people using the church facilities. All of our meetings are audio recorded, and the upcoming events are posted on our website. Our website is simpleactions.net. And we also are starting an email list. If you would like to be included on the email list, please sign up at the literature table or on the website. So that's up and running. All right, in closing, we ask again to thank the panel for sharing. Woo-hoo! And thanks to all who participated. Now this is the important part. After we clean up, all are invited and continue the conversation on the stuff discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which is a very important part of sobriety, which will be held at the wonderful International Pancake House on Granby Street and Granby and 21st Street. IHOP. They know us and love us there. And I'm going to behave and not correct anyone that's brave enough to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Woo! I got people with Margaret.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny.
And this group likes to close with the Lord's Prayer.
Deliver us from evil, for thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever.